Welcome to The Rink. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian, along with my co-host, Tom Luongo. We're going to be talking today with Steve Lepore from Puck the Media. Well, Doug Waite laid a big hit down. The Lightning are laying down for just about everyone, and the Boston Bruins laid down some paint without the help of a tape measure. We're going to cut twice and measure once. Yes, you heard that right. On The Rink. So the NHL had 15 games scheduled on Saturday and nothing scheduled on Sunday. And there was only one real matchup that you and I were really concerned with, which is, of course, a matchup made in heaven for us. It's Buffalo versus the Avalanche.
Which was an outstanding hockey game, by the way.
Oh, it was a great game. I was glad I could actually be in Denver for that. It's probably one of the few games I'll actually get to see at the Pepsi Center this year. It was a phenomenal game. And being an Avalanche fan, just watching the Avalanche fall apart completely in the second period, come back in the third period, and edge of the seat for the rest of the game. And for a person who personally, I'm not a fan of the shootout, but wow, what a hell of an ending for the game! The entire way.
You guys won 3-2 in a shootout, in a 5-round shootout. It was pretty impressive. So, yeah, it was a hell of a hockey game. I watched it at home with my wife, and it was just fantastic. But it's funny. I popped by Puck Daddy this afternoon. I was looking at the blog, and Greg had a post up about Super Saturday, and he had a couple of points that I thought were really salient. He said, it's great that the NHL had all 30 teams going, but we should be really looking at trying to make more event-style things happening in the NHL. So, there's three things to take away from this. Is one, can we do a better job of promoting a night like that? Two, can we do a better job of scheduling it? I think one of his commenters brought it up. Wouldn't it be great to have hockey running from 1 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time to 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time? Would be great. And then three, can we really do a better job of setting up matchups? Because while Buffalo and Colorado was a hell of a hockey game and personally really – interesting for this particular little podcast, I think Detroit, Colorado, or Vancouver, Colorado would have been far more interesting, and say Buffalo, Toronto, or even Buffalo, Boston would have been far more interesting. So,
oh, absolutely. I mean, some of these matchups that they're trying to get, they're trying to do the. I'm a huge fan of opening up the schedule to East Conference plays, Western Conference, and the like. But for if you're going to make a huge event of 15 games all in one day, and you're going to have Tampa Bay and San Jose. Right. You're going to have Montreal and Anaheim. They did it right in a few places. I mean, Toronto and Ottawa. Now, that's a good matchup. Right. That's exactly what the people are going to want to see there. Right. But, and Detroit-Chicago is still a pretty good matchup. But Florida-St. Louis, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Even Carolina, New York Islanders is not a good game. Devils Philadelphia is a pretty good matchup, but still you've got the obvious ones. You got the Battle of Ontario, which they actually did, one of the battles of New York, Battle of Alberta.
That would have been nice. I mean, Calgary versus Edmonton would have been great. Now Edmonton versus Vancouver is still a pretty good matchup.
That's true.
And of course when they make these schedules, they can't predict who is going to be a really good team, who's going to be a really bad team. But the classic matchups, if you could have a day of just classic grudge match style beatdowns of those kind of matchups that fans are just going to go crazy over for an entire day. Now that's an NHL event.
Right. When they do like Canada Day and they have all six Canadian teams playing against each other, that's a good idea. Now, why not piggyback that, or even like an all original six night, piggyback that with all the other teams playing at the same time, and then promote the entire thing that way on Versus, and hell, even get Versus to show up and do a special game.
Mm-hmm.
If possible, if that's, if contracts and schedules will allow for such a thing, and have Versus, on a special edition of Versus on the NHL on Versus Saturday night, we've got, the Devils and the Rangers, would be really kind of cool.
That would be really cool. But, of course, the Versus likes the Monday, Tuesday schedule, which I'm a huge fan of the Monday night games, since Monday nights are my day off. But that's pretty rare for the rest of the world. And
right.
It would be nice if they could get more of those kind of event style games going.
Right.
The Winter Classic is a great thing, but it's a great thing to do once a year, or actually I would prefer to see it once every 3 years, you know, make it a real event, make it something that people go all out for and completely cut loose. And, but things like this, you could do this, let's say twice a year and make it more of a big event.
I agree completely. It would be really nice. So it was a good, it was a good post by G-Dub this afternoon, and, sparked a good conversation, I think. So,
and yet here's the funny thing. Here's Ottawa playing Toronto and losing to Toronto on Super Saturday.
Right. But spanking the Sabres tonight, and that's just killing me. So
I don't mean to laugh at your misery. I mean, I'm not.
Oh no, that's perfectly reasonable. It was meant to elicit that kind of, you know, that's what the timing's for. So no, that's fine. Yeah, it figures that they would pick Buffalo to use to get off the schneid and, you know, play a perfect defensive game because they couldn't keep the puck out of their own net for the 8 previous games they played. So I don't know.
Well, that's the thing with Ottawa is that, or actually any team that's been down as much as Ottawa has been. I mean, Ottawa's been 2-5-1 as of before tonight's Buffalo game, but there's always got to be some time that they're going to come back.
Right.
Any team. What's the old? What do they always say that you'd rather play a team that's level than a team that's losing? Because a team that's losing, they got to win sometime.
Right. And they're desperate. That's what Lindy Ruff actually brought that up in the pregame skate today. He was very terse with the media for once, which is very rare. And he really just said, you can almost feel this. Like, I don't like where my guys are right now, and I expect Ottawa to be desperate tonight. So they better get their heads together. And apparently they didn't. So, but you know, Ottawa, this is maybe their moment to get off the doormat, as opposed to the other teams that started slow, like Anaheim and Calgary, and where they, you know, Anaheim lost their first 5 games, and Calgary looked like they were in trouble, and even your Avs started the season 0-3, and now have won their last 5, and like we said earlier, they look good tonight. So, you know, the only question was when, if ever, Ottawa was going to pick themselves back up again. And if they didn't, when did the clock start for Brian Murray?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to ask, because you Melnick wants a cup, and I don't know. So,
well, you know, it's kind of that, 29 teams are always restructuring.
That's true.
You know, even the Penguins, you know, well, we have to make changes. Well, really, do you? Because you looked pretty good last season. Maybe you should kind of stick with that for a moment. Of course, then again, you know, look at Ottawa. They've kind of been sticking with a very similar formula ever since making it to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and slow starts are maybe nothing to really bank on. Is kind of might kind of be the lesson lately.
I mean, they got off that amazingly hot start last year, and you know, the theory was that winning came too easy and they kind of lost their focus. You know, similar things that has been leveled at other teams that have started really fast in the past. You know, I guess maybe they still didn't learn their lesson after getting ousted by Pittsburgh quickly in the playoffs last year. And, you know, that was the big hope in Ottawa, that the message would have gotten through to the guys currently on the team, that, you know, you can't take anything for granted in this league at all. And it's taken them even now 8 games to maybe start putting that back together. And, you know, the rivalry between Ottawa and Buffalo is pretty heated. So it's not surprising at all that they would use the game tonight as a refocus, as it were. We'll just see how long it lasts.
Well, and we have Martin Gerber loses 2 games in a row, and then Alex Auld loses 2 games in a row. So I guess that's so much for the goalie controversy. Both goalies can lose.
Well, both goalies are eminently average. But the big problem, if you look at it, the big problem in Ottawa is that their fourth line is the only one currently playing at a plus. Everybody else is a deep minus. Mike Fisher's a minus 5. Chris Phillips is a minus 6. That's the issue. When Brian Lee is still playing at a plus, but Chris Phillips is a minus 6, you have problems from the top down. And you know, I don't presume to speak well enough about what's actually happening in that room or anything else, because I don't follow the team that closely. But you gotta wonder, you know, why it is that people aren't willing to pay the price, as that was brought up on, I think it was on the Hot Stove over the weekend. It was either the Hot Stove or the actual telecast of the Ottawa Toronto game I caught for a little bit. And they were talking about, you know, Ottawa's doing, looks like they're doing everything right and they're all in position, but they're not. The sticks aren't there. Sticks aren't tied up. Guys aren't, you know, being planted on their butts, that kind of thing. And it's the little stuff that's just not in their game. And so obviously Craig Hartsburg hasn't gotten through to them yet.
The Penguins are doing well. The Rangers are doing well. The Senators are not doing well. And the Lightning are not doing well. So that's kind of your European split start. You know,
sure. And no one expected the Lightning to be any good. They're really an AHL defense. And, you know, and a sideshow for a coach who's already in trouble, apparently. So I don't know.
Well, going at 1-3-3 as of the time of this recording, yeah, that's I would hope he's in trouble. I would hope he's in a little trouble at this point.
Yeah. Well, apparently I hate to reference the hot stove again, but apparently there was some talk that it was Al Strachan said that apparently Len Barry actually went into the locker room between periods and was diagramming plays and power plays and stuff on the whiteboard while Barry Melrose was relegated to the sidelines. That's the key, if that's what's going on in Tampa right now, if I were Barry Melrose, I wouldn't want to stay.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, that's a big if, obviously. We don't know how many reports actually come out of the locker room that are wholly accurate. Yeah, that's pretty rare.
But that was Strachan apparently one of the players, and he wouldn't say whom, told that to him directly. And Mike Milbury was, if you couldn't believe, of course, Mike Milbury was, you know, incensed and called that nameless player a gutless puke on the air. It was kind of funny. One of Milbury's more lucid moments, actually.
And that's the great thing about being on a network. You actually have lawyers to back you up when you say things like that. Podcasters like you and I, on the other hand, not so much.
You'll note that I said Al Strachan said. All right.
All right. If I'm going to poke fun of anybody, though, at this point, it's going to be the Boston Bruins, and not for their play right now, but the on ice markings, the painting the faceoff circles, on one end of the ice was discovered this weekend to be 4 feet off from where they should be from the goal line. Now, when
I'm sorry, that's how long have they been hosting games?
Oh, absolutely.
In Boston.
It's not like this is the first time that they've painted the ice at, you know, TD Bank North Garden Center thing, fleet thing, place.
Hold on, let me check to see if TD Bank North is on the the bank implosion list, and maybe that's why they got it wrong, because they couldn't actually hire. I don't know. That just makes no sense.
Well, that's just the economy right now. We have to you buy 4 feet extra of a bad mortgage on that ice, and then, you know, you never know what you're going to get.
I wonder if that section of the ice was actually tied up in an SIV that was packaged over to some German retirement fund or whatever. I don't know.
Oh my, that's wrong. I think the best part about that story is that it was caught by a member of the media, which in a way kind of makes sense. If you're up in the media box, you might see, hey, something looks a little squirrely here. And when you're down on the ice, you're not really going to see it. But that's going to take a little bit of money to melt down the ice, change those markings, and then refreeze the ice.
Right.
And this isn't one of those buildings like Edmonton where you don't have a basketball team.
Right.
You're going to be doing changeovers. Oh, this is for such a silly thing and something so small. It just seems like it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, I just can't. I'm just still in shock that they, you know, prepped the ice wrong in Boston. You know, if that had happened in Tampa, you can like cue the circus music and, you know, the gaggle of Canadian hockey fans going and say, I don't know anything about friggin' hockey down in Florida. Yeah, except, you know, we in Florida look at you guys and say, you know, you guys don't know anything about driving in Canada. So get over yourself.
Oh, I think it's great. It's that whole hockey entitlement thing that I try and stay away from, you know. But, you know, who deserves a team? A team that can paint the ice right. Ooh, you know.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. It was probably the funniest thing I'd heard all day today was about that. It's just.
So to harken back a little bit to what we were discussing earlier, there were the 15 games the other night on Saturday, and one of which was the Carolina and Islander tilt. And in there was an ugly incident involving Doug Waite and the youngest setter, Brandon Sutter, with an ugly T-bone hit at center ice that we can argue the legality of until we're blue in the face, and I'm sure everybody will. But to me, it's the kind of hit that I just can't cotton anymore. It's a level of violence that I'm just really uncomfortable with at the speed that the game is being played and the amount of body armor that the guys are wearing and whatnot. To me, we're getting into a dangerous territory where the hockey culture says that that's legal and is viable, but it's becoming a little too dangerous for me. And the last thing I want to see is somebody get killed out there, and I can't cotton it anymore.
Well, nobody wants to see, nobody wants to see a player carted off the ice in that manner. Nobody wants to see a player escorted off the ice. And I think that part of our problem in general with this hit is that nobody's separating the outcome from the hit itself. Nobody wants to see that kid take a concussion. Nobody wants to see him have to be helped off the ice. Nobody wants that. But the hit itself had so many strange factors into it. I mean, my personal belief is that Sutter was about 80% responsible for the outcome of that hit as Doug Waite himself. Doug Waite was committed to the hit before Sutter exposed himself more by reaching for the puck rather than, for instance, standing up a little bit more to absorb more of the hit that was coming towards him. I really don't think they saw it coming. And when Sutter reached for the puck and turned his head more towards Doug Waite and got lower down closer towards where Waite's shoulder was, that's when head to shoulder contact was initiated. I really don't think that Doug Waite was trying to go for the head at all and was staying low. He didn't stand up into the hit. He stood up afterwards to keep his balance, things like that. I think there's so many factors in that one particular hit that make it hard. And I'm really glad that the NHL hasn't yet completely legislated out hits to the head because of incidents like this. I don't want to see hits to the head. But at the same time, if you're not going for the head and you get penalized, that isn't any more correct.
Well, the thing is, and there's a couple of things I'd like to talk to. You bring up a lot of good points about the head. There's no question that Brandon Sutter extended himself to try and get to the puck and push it past Waite at the wrong moment in time. And I'm not saying that the kid in some way doesn't bear the responsibility of, hey, keep your head up out there and all of that. My problem is that, one, if you watch the replay carefully, you'll note that the last time he touched the puck was down around the faceoff dot and chipped it out around the defenseman. And he got hit at center ice. Now, Doug Waite committed to the hit well before Brandon Sutter ever retrieved the puck. And he actually retrieved the puck right at the instant that he got hit. Really, Doug Waite committed to that hit. That would have been interference under any other circumstance. That's the thing that really bothers me. And that had he taken the angle to go after the puck, the amount of damage that would have been inflicted, even if Sutter had done the exact same things, would have been a lot less. The way I'm looking at this is, to me, I have no problem with a guy getting injured on a play where both guys are going, or either one guy has the puck and is about to, and gets hit in the process of trying to be separated from it, or both guys are legitimately going for the puck at the same time. But in this case, neither guy had the puck, and one guy was reaching for it, and one guy was looking to drill another guy through the boards. And the reason Waite could do that was because he knew he had his defense partner. He knew he had his defenseman behind him. Campoli was standing right behind him, so he knew he was in the clear, and he made that decision well before, and because he was committed to that hit, as opposed to playing the puck, which I fundamentally disagree with. You should be going for the puck. You should be initiating contact to go for the puck. Mm-hmm. That's where it crosses the line for me. And Doug Waite should know better than that. My personal opinion is that Doug Waite's lost a step and knew he couldn't retrieve the puck, and so he went for the big hit. And that's my personal opinion on it. And it seems, you know, and that if you make – so I'm really on the fence about, you know, how we go forward to get rid of these things, because I want to see the number of these kinds of hits lessened. So that's why I think we should go to mandatory penalties, either a double minor or a major. At this point, the best I can figure is let's make the teams potentially pay for the behavior that we don't want in the game, and we'll use this as a good first step towards figuring out the best way to go about eliminating it.
This week, Tom and I are talking to Steve Lepore of Puck the Media. He keeps an eye on the hockey media, but he also is a Devils fan with a story to tell.
Oh, I have a great story about Philly and New Jersey. One time, I have a long-kept theory that the Devils fans think have, since the Rangers were a disgrace for most of the late 90s and early part of this decade, that the Flyers are more our biggest rivals. One time we were at a Devils game, a Devils Flyers, and, you know, they infiltrate the arena occasionally, and we see a guy in a Terrell Owens Eagles jersey, a black Terrell Owens Eagles jersey, getting dragged out on all fours by the security guard, and it was just one of the more bizarre experiences. I was seeing one security guard grabbing his arms, one security guard grabbing his legs, and I wondered what he did to deserve that. And on the concourse, I saw this guy in a Brian Giotto jersey walking down with blood dripping down his face and a bruise. So I can only imagine what he said to the guy in the Terrell Owens jersey.
Purely circumstantial evidence. Purely circumstantial evidence.
People are wearing a football jersey to a hockey game. That should tell you something.
I've been to Giants-Eagles games where people chant Flyers suck all the time, so.
Well, yeah.
It's really...
Yeah.
Stick it to them where it really counts.
I grew up a Giants fan. That makes sense.
I went to the Mets-Phillies, the Phillies were winning, so you know what? Hey, Lindros is a pussy.
Exactly.
Bobby Clark is a wuss. Yeah. And then people started to get really mad.
And so yet,
after Lindros, no one is mad. You go after Bobby Clark, people start to get a little angry.
Get a little bit back, yeah. Here's the Flyers, and they have two wins on the season, and both of those came from
Yeah, well, I kind of expected that the Flyers would either pick it up completely against the Devils, or have the wheels fall off completely, and Stevens would be fired at the end of the weekend. Because, you know, if the Flyers had gone to 0-5 and 3, Stevens would have been gone. Mm-hmm. He would have been out of there just that quick. It's just close enough to the Phillies being out of the World Series for Philly fans to realize, oh, my God, this team sucks. they've had it lucky. They haven't had this crazy postseason baseball thing going on in Philadelphia for a while. So they haven't had to notice that the hockey team has been in the toilet for the first month of the season.
Right.
Less distractions, you know, coming up soon. So, yeah. I can imagine how it is for a Flyers fan to kind of suddenly take notice after the World Series and go, hey, wait, our record's what?
We're bad.
We're doing what?
We're bad. Danny Briere's out for a month, and they have no defense. Yeah. And, you know, the best part of their defense is the Braden Coburn versus commercial. really. So.
Which, you know, that is great,
if you're going to promote the league. What a great way to promote the league with – Braden Coburn.
That's just an awesome commercial. You know, I don't know who came up with that.
It's a great commercial, but, you know, Braden Coburn.
Yeah, but it's better than, you know, it's better than Sean Avery, I'm sorry, which is, you know, that's our...
Oh, they need to promote him. He gets people listening, he gets people watching. They need to promote him as part of the game. I don't care how terrible he is or what he's doing with his stick in front of the net, he needs to be promoted as part of the game.
Well, do you think that are you kind of taking the tact of any promotion is good promotion, or do you think that maybe there is a such thing as bad promotion for the NHL?
Well, we're putting on an outdoor game at a baseball stadium on January 1st while all the college bowls are going on. So clearly this league will do anything to promote itself, but nothing that will inspire any controversy at all. Like, once Yankee Stadium was brought up as a possibility for the outdoor game, oh, no, we can't have the last event at Yankee Stadium be a hockey game. All of a sudden, you see the NHL back off, and they move to Wrigley. The NHL will do anything to promote itself as long as it doesn't tick off anyone else.
Right.
So
as long as everybody else is happy, we can promote ourselves.
So here we have Sean. You think Sean Avery should be promoted more?
Absolutely.
We've got the Brendan Coburn commercial, and we have kind of which is kind of surprising, considering that we have Sidney Crosby, who seems to be the NHL's poster boy for promoting the league.
Yeah. It's not working. We're not going to see Sidney Crosby hosting like Saturday Night Live or something like you saw Peyton Manning doing. I think it'd be more likely we saw Ovechkin host Saturday Night Live before Crosby.
Crosby
kind of puts across this idea that he's maybe the ultimate version of this, but he's just that boring, you know, Canadian boy who too many of these players seem to be.
For me, he bores the living crap out of me. I don't know how you feel about him, but I'm so bored with him sometimes.
Absolutely. He's so unbelievably boringly good at what he does.
He's boringly good.
He's boringly good. He's tirelessly good, but he's boringly good. But where's the next Jeremy Roenick coming from? We have this crop of really good young American kids coming up, like Kane and Parisi and who am I picking up from the Sabres? Stafford? Kirby. Is Stafford American?
You've got, no, Stafford is non-American.
No. He went to college here, though.
Yeah, he went to college here. Yeah, well, all the Sabres went
to college. Ryan Miller.
Nathan Gerby's coming up through the ranks. Yeah.
We have these young American, even to the point where it's Gomez and Drury, we have these young American guys, fairly young, playing well in this league. Who's going to be the next Jeremy Roenick? Who's going to step up and promote the game in this league as much as they possibly can, the way Roenick has promoted himself and the league?
Roenick was great for the league. He, acting, and how many times has he been on Fox Sports' Best Damn Sports Show and all that stuff?
He's on talk shows all the time.
He's
great for the league. He's like Avery, except not Sean Avery.
he's a little less repulsive in general.
What the NHL wishes that every player could be, a self-promoting whore who can actually put up 80, 90 points in a season, or at least in his heyday.
Ovechkin is a pretty, in a way, is a self-promoting, I don't know if I'd call him a whore, but at the same time, when you ask the guy, who's your favorite player, and he says, myself, that's pretty self-promoting.
Yeah, but he has a funny name, so... he has a funny name, so...
And a thick accent that American viewers might have a hard time fighting through, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the problem, though. No one wants to promote anyone from another country. And apparently Americans don't want to listen to anyone from a foreign country based on, where our country stands in the world. But we'll not get political tonight.
Well, I mean, it's too bad, because Ovechkin really is a great personality He's just a tremendous enthusiasm for the game itself.
For the hardcore hockey fan, Ovechkin's the guy you promote to them. Why am I still following this brand? Why am I still giving in so much money that I do to this brand? Ovechkin's the guy you promote to the hardcore fan. But we need someone that we can promote, and maybe this fan doesn't exist. Maybe this fan isn't interested at all. But to the casual fans, as someone who maybe watches the entire playoffs, but doesn't put crap about the regular season, doesn't believe that the regular season means nothing, which is almost completely untrue at this point with how close you see the races come towards the end of the season, but only wants to follow the playoffs because they believe that any other hockey is of lower quality.
Right.
And they won't put down money to see lower quality hockey. They'll pay to see hockey played at its highest level, but they won't pay to see anything lower than that. They need to convince the casual fan that every game matters, every game is exciting, which is a little bit harder to do because teams like Devils are kind of ruining that. But I'm allowed to say that because I'm a Devils fan.
No, that's fine. If there's something a time I can't sleep at night, I like to put on a Devils versus Minnesota Wild game.
See, the Devils game is still exciting because you get to see Chico Resch eat something. And nothing is more nothing, my friends, is more entertaining than watching Chico Resch eat.
That's true. And he is always eating.
Well, thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. Our special guest today was Steve Lepore from Puck the Media. You can find his blog at Puck the Media. www.wordpress.com. We're going to have more from Steve at the end of the week with episode 5.5. You can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com. Tom's work is at nhl.fanhouse.com. And you can find my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com. You can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Or you can pick up the phone and call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.